happy Tuesday. This is Kirk Ludeke, Scouting Post, and I'm back from Buffalo. It was an interesting NHL draft weekend, and I'm looking forward to recapping the Boston Bruins draft, and I'm going to do that, but I'm going to do that with the three amigos, me, Dominic Tiano, and Reed Duthie. We're going to do that podcast this coming Thursday, and in the meantime, I'm going to go on the Days of Yore with Greg Ezell and Brianne, or Bree, from the Days of Yore. They were nice enough to have me on before the draft to do a preview show, and then we're going to recap. But, you know, I got into a little bit of a Twitter spat recently, and, you know, look, we're all human. Like I said, that does happen, I guess, when you're passionate. But I'm just kind of blown away at the just overwhelming reactions about the 29th overall selection in Friday's first round. Trent Frederick, U.S. national team third line center, who went 29th overall to Boston. And so I thought one of the better ways to maybe lay out a case for and against the decision to draft him would be to do it in a podcast style format, as opposed to writing a big long novel. And I think doing the podcast gives me an opportunity to maybe articulate my points a little better. And I don't know, maybe hearing my voice and you know, my attempt to be balanced and fair and to present both sides in the debate will maybe sway you better than if I just write it down. So this relatively short podcast is an attempt to kind of capture my knowledge of the situation, the fact that I have seen Trent Frederick and scouted him this year, doing film study and seeing him live at the under-18s. And then basically do have a pretty, I would say, reasonable knowledge of the NHL draft process and pretty much how the Boston Bruins tend to view things philosophically as an organization. And I do think that there is a, you know, this kind of move, this sentiment out there that the Bruins are just hashing things up, you know, totally by taking this guy. I mean, look, this is America. I mean, you're welcome to believe that. And I can understand why people don't have faith in this organization. But I think that's a pretty simplistic view myself. And I hope that after this podcast, maybe can take a step back and say, you know, food for thought. If I don't convince you outright, maybe at least you might feel somewhat better about the selection and maybe be willing to look at things in a slightly different light when it comes to the Boston Bruins scouting staff and the organization and the decision makers at the top. And then it's entirely possible that this podcast is a complete waste of time and energy and effort for some of you because you're just not going to listen and your minds are already made up. And it's just, you know, bottom line, it's a bridge too far to make that happen. So those big booms you hear in the background are thunder. So hopefully we don't lose power here and I can power through this. So I'm going to do this podcast in a point counterpoint format, where I'm going to make five observations points about Trent Frederick, and then I will take the opposite position. And we'll see where this leads. And at the end of the podcast, you know, if I've convinced you one way or another, you know, good thing. And if not, maybe you at least have a reason to maybe alter your position slightly or take a wait-and-see approach. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. So the first point, the one that I've seen the most common, so we're going to start with the points that have been elevated the most on the internet, on Twitter, sent to me. I get a lot of Twitter questions and a lot of information and feedback from various fans. And what I saw the most was Trent Frederick at 29 was a bad use of assets, as he was not projected to be the pick at 29. So I am going to make the point, or I'm going to argue that point, and then I will take the opposite approach when I finish making my case. That is absolutely right. I challenge anyone to find a pre-draft projection that was made public that has Trent Frederick in it. And I don't think such an animal exists. When you look at the public projections, Frederick was typically at best in the 40s, I know that Anthony Morrow of Draft Buzz Hockey had him at 34. And if you like the Draft Buzz Hockey guide and product, I think Anthony and his team do a pretty good job. 34 is not too far of a leap from 29. But my staff at the Redline Report had Frederick as 112. And so that is problematic. Central Scouting had him as the 47th North American skater, which when you add the Euros, puts him well beyond the first round. And the fact of the matter is, you look at some of the players that were available to the Bruins at 29, and it just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense as to why they would take this player in terms of what he brings to the table today. Now, Frederick is a two-way center with good size. He scored 20 goals for the national team playing on the third line at the under-18s. He was the third-line pivot behind Clayton Keller and Logan Brown, and the U.S. team was pretty stacked on their top two lines, and the third line was, you know, was pretty good. It was your typical grinding, checking energy line, and they did generate some offense. I thought Will Lockwood looked pretty good on that unit. We saw a little bit of Graham McPhee and also Nick Pastajov, and both of those players were drafted, but much later on. So it was a little shocking to hear Trent Frederick's name called at 29, because if you even allow for, you know, a even reasonable advancement and progression in his game, there were still other forwards that were more productive and carried a higher upside. Look no further than Alex DeBrincat. He ended up going 10 picks later to the Chicago Blackhawks. This is a player who scored 101 goals in two seasons for the Erie Otters. And even though he's a small, diminutive forward, Alex DeBrincat would have represented the kind of skill and high ceiling, high reward type of potential that would have made perfect sense for the Bruins at 29. It doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense that if the Bruins were going to hold on to that pick at 29, that they would use it on a player that, as of right now, appears to be just another plugger, mucker, grinder. And the Boston Bruins certainly have plenty of those. What they don't have enough of in abundance are top six, high-end, dangerous scoring forwards at the wing and the center position. Therefore, Trent Frederick represents a missed opportunity and a mismanagement of a key asset, that first-round pick acquired from San Jose last summer for Martin Jones, who ended up taking the Sharks to the Stanley Cup Final, which is why it ended up being the second-to-last pick in the first round. This was a bad, if not outright bad, a questionable pick by the Boston Bruins management under Don Sweeney and the scouting staff led by Keith Gretzky. That is the point. Now, here is the counterpoint. Is Frederick a bad pick at 29? Well, as the old saying goes, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. The Boston Bruins insist that there is more to this player than meets the eye, and that even though the conventional thinking certainly has him outside of the first-round range, in their view, he is a first-round value and talent. This is a player who scored 20 goals. We're not talking about a 5-10 goal scorer for the U.S. national team. 20 goals is pretty impressive considering he's a third-line center. But more than that, Trent Frederick is an athlete. He's a three-sport star who excelled in hockey, football, and baseball. He's got brothers and sisters who are elite athletes in football, in hockey, in volleyball. As a matter of fact, athleticism runs through the blood of the Frederick family. And they were extremely excited when his name was called, and he had a pretty raucous entourage there in Buffalo. What's interesting is that this kid probably went to the draft Friday night not thinking that he could get selected. Although, I'm not going to try to get inside his head. He did say it was quite a surprise for him to be picked there But maybe, just maybe, that competitor in the back of his mind said, hey, I need to be there and I need to be sitting in First Niagara Center on Friday night, because you never know. Someone just might like me enough to take a flyer in the last couple of picks in the first round, and it happened. Now, Trent Frederick represents something the Boston Bruins simply do not have enough of in abundance, and that is he's a big-bodied center who can play an effective two-way game and is smart and industrious and grinds things out along the walls, protects the puck, and excels in the puck possession game. His skating is pretty good. It's got room for improvement. First couple steps, something he could stand to improve and get a little better with his lateral agility. But he goes hard to the net, plays the game in straight lines, and he works hard and scores workmanlike goals. He's not sexy or flashy. He's not going to come down off the rush and dazzle you with a dangle, toe drag, a quick inside move or head fake, and then roof the puck over a befuddled, baffled netminder. But what he is going to do is give you an honest effort. He's going to play a responsible game. And he gives the Bruins a physical, body-banging forward who can play in a lot of different situations. And let's face it, when you look at their organization, they just do not have a lot of people up the middle that can do what Trent Frederick can do. Although they certainly, it can be argued, don't have an overabundance of high-end talent at that position coming up through the ranks either. Overall, when you go back to the 29th picks in history, we're talking about names like Chris Summers. He played 70 career NHL games. Steve Downey, everyone's heard of him. Nick Cronwall, certainly a very successful and steady defenseman over the years for the Detroit Red Wings. But then in more recent years, we're talking about Emerson Edom in 2010, Carter Ashton in 2009, and Nicholas Jensen in 2011. None of those players have really gone on to have much of an impact in the NHL, although they've kind of bounced around there and been in the mix. So ultimately, what kind of a successful player are you getting at 29? That pick in the draft tends to not have the greatest of track records. The odds are against the pick, no matter who you're taking at the 29 selection, of ever going on to be a high-end, first-line, second-line, effective contributor who year in and year out has all-star capability. Now, is that to say that it can happen? Of course not. For example, there are many examples in history where players taken well after the first round have gone on to become superstars. So it's a cop-out to say that they couldn't have gotten a top-end player at 29. But by the same token, I don't think using the 29th selection on a high-floor, solid, capable guy who will most likely play in the NHL to some capacity is such a bad thing. And there's your first point, counterpoint. Second point. Bruins amateur scouting director Keith Gretzky said after the draft that Frederick is not a top two-line guy. We know that. As a result, that point has caused a lot of consternation. Why would the Bruins just take a player who doesn't have skill there? Why would he admit taking a third-line player? You know, it makes any kind of sense whatsoever. I don't know. It doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense, especially when you consider that there are players like Vitali Abramov and Adam Mastrin and Pascal LaBerge or even Wade Allison, who looked to be a pretty big-bodied, high offensive upside right winger who was available at the 29th pick and yet didn't go until 52 to the Philadelphia Flyers. There were myriad options there. It just doesn't add up. Why on earth would Keith Gretzky and Don Sweeney and the Boston Bruins brain trust come right out and admit this guy's not a top six forward before we even get started? Isn't that admitting defeat before you've even marched to battle? There's something to be said for that. When teams are going through the draft process, fans would like them to be committed to finding the best possible players at the best possible positions and maximize the use of their assets. Coming right out and saying, Yeah, in all likelihood, he's not a top two line guy as he's constituted today. Just doesn't seem to be the smartest move for an organization that has missed the playoffs the last couple years and really can't afford to spend a lot of time investing energy and resources into bottom six forwards. Certainly an area that they don't need a lot of help in. That's your point on number two with the Gretzky quote. Now, here's the counterpoint. So, who says that Trent Frederick, as of today, is never going to be a top two line player? I mean, Keith Gretzky said that at the draft, sure. But let's take a look at the context in which that point was made. Who are the Boston Bruins roster players as of right now at center? Well, you've got Patrice Bergeron. He only finished second place to Anze Kopitar in Selke Trophy voting, which would have been his fourth Selke Trophy of his career. And then your second line guy is David Krejci, who, like Bergeron, is inside the top 20 Boston Bruins scorers of all time and is arguably their most offensively gifted center. And although he's had injury problems of late, and did have off-season hip surgery, Krejci is a guy who, when he's healthy and on his game, is as good as anyone. And he's among the all-time leaders of the Bruins in playoff scoring. Those are your top two centers. Now add Ryan Spooner, who hasn't been an ideal third-line guy because his game isn't all that heavy. But when Krejci was injured at the end of December and missed a few weeks, Spooner played some of the best hockey of his career. On the second line, replacing Krejci and playing with some talented forwards and actually producing. And he did it the year before when he was playing with Milan Lucic and David Pastrnak to close out the 2014 regular season. The bottom line is, with those three centers ahead of Trent Frederick, it makes complete sense that Gretzky would say he's not a top two-line guy. Because in his mind, he's thinking Frederick probably, as of today, doesn't have the tools to pass those guys on the depth chart. But the beautiful thing about drafting 18-year-olds is that they have development left in them. Trent Frederick's not a finished product at 18. He's got a ways to go. And who's to say he won't develop into that potential top two-line center down the road? Keith Gretzky probably did him a favor. It would have been silly for Gretzky to go out there and say, yeah, we see him as a top six forward and certainly a top two-line center when you're talking about a player who was not projected as a first-round pick. I think a lot of fans would have been insulted by that. So he was darned if he did and darned if he didn't either way. By going out and admitting that he doesn't see Trent Frederick as a top two-line center today in 2016, right after the NHL entry draft, he's admitting that the organization knowingly shot low, and that is the worst possible thing that could happen. But the reality is, Gretzky's just being realistic. Because again, as a high-floor player, Frederick could be one of these individuals who ends up becoming a lot better down the road when he gets more development time in college at the University of Wisconsin. And there is talk that his rights are owned by Niagara of the Ontario Hockey League, and he could go there. But ultimately, we don't know what's going to happen. And I think to make a mountain out of a molehill, i.e. fixate on a quote that was made by Gretzky where he was essentially acknowledging that Frederick is not in Bergeron and Krejci and Spooner's league right now, is kind of being a little unfair in the situation. Like I said, if he had even tried to intimate that Frederick was, people would have thrown out the BS flag and called him on it. So he was being honest, but I think if we take a step back and take his comments with more of a perspective and in context, it's not the worst thing he could have said. Although, if I had to put money on it, I'm not going to bet the farm that Frederick will develop into a top two-line center. I would just offer to you that without a crystal ball, we don't know for a fact that it is impossible he will ever get there. And that's the second point. The third point, now this is something that I've seen repeatedly on the internet. And it's interesting because, you know, a lot of a lot of people out there just kind of make assumptions about how organizations work and what they prioritize in the draft and whatnot. So I'm going to attempt to make the point here. I'll argue in favor of the fans' worldview, and then I'll share the more realistic worldview that I've learned not only from talking to the Bruins, but with many scouting and management contacts in hockey over the years. And every team is slightly different. Some see the world in the same way, and others are polar opposites. But the important thing on this third point is to not apply a cookie-cutter methodology to the way the world works, okay? And to just assume that because one team does it one way, everyone does it that way. Now, whether, you know, people or teams should adopt the successful models of other teams, that is a fair debate. But on this third point, where I'm going to tackle the idea that picking a checking bottom six forward is not an acceptable use of a first-round pick. So, conventional thought says, in the first round, you're going for your top talent, you're swinging for the fences, you're getting the absolute best possible skill and upside that you can at any position, regardless of whether you're picking a center, a winger, a defenseman, or a goaltender. If you're not spending that top pick on someone that you absolutely think could have major boom potential down the road, then you are failing. And there's a lot to be said about that. First-round picks are precious commodities. They also have the higher chance of making it to the NHL than any of the other rounds. By the time you get toward the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh rounds, the odds of those players going on to have NHL careers, at least that sustain NHL careers and not just brief cups of coffee and playing here and there, are astronomically lower than your first-round selections. So there is value and there is validity to saying, hey, taking someone who's more of a third-line player right now in junior hockey is an unnecessary risk and reflects poor judgment and asset management on the part of a team. There's absolutely no way to justify that you should be taking anything less than a high-end, top potential player when you're picking inside the first round, no matter where that position is. So obviously, if you're picking at the top of the round, at first, second, third overall, you're shooting for the highest end, most elite talent available to you at that position. But even if you're picking 25 to 30, you should be mining the draft list for the highest upside, biggest boom potential, highest reward players that are available. And certainly, when you go back and you look at the list of players, Trent Frederick would not have appeared on anyone's top 10 under that criteria at 29. And therefore, for the Bruins to have an organizational philosophy that says that taking a player that does not project as a higher skill, higher potential guy at 29 is a poor philosophy and that the team should be run through the ringer as a result of that. It's unacceptable, and the fans have every right to be highly, highly disappointed, disgusted, and absolutely untrustful of this regime to get the Boston Bruins back on track. Does that about cover it, folks? I think it's pretty close. Again, you know, not saying, you know, using bad language like some of the stuff that was directed to me yesterday on Twitter by a certain individual. I'm going to say that's probably effective argument enough. Now, here's the counterpoint to that. Teams have different building blocks and different priorities at different times. Developing prospects is not a linear process. You have so many players with so many so much disparity between their timelines and when they're going to be ready to be plugged in and when they're physically mature and capable enough to vie for NHL positions, and it's a fluid process. If you go into that process and your mindset is single track to just simply accrue the best talent, and you're not taking into account chemistry, you're not taking into account character, you're not taking into account intelligence and how that player fits and what you need that might need that player to be doing for you, then all you're doing is is collecting talented guys. And certainly players like Alexander Kolchichev, for example, are a cautionary tale to just simply drafting the most skilled player at a given draft position and expecting that his talent is just going to carry him, rise to the top, and get him there. If anything, we should be looking at Coco and understanding that, hey, sometimes it's not just about taking those swing-for-the-fences picks at any position, even at 29. Because again, the Boston Bruins have a different outlook, and they know better than anyone what their salary structure looks like, what their depth chart looks like, and moreover, who they're planning on going out and making a serious pursuit for. We have free agency right around the corner, so maybe a Trent Frederick made perfect sense to them at 29. For people who aren't involved in the process, that seems to be an inefficient, irresponsible way of doing things, but it's reality. You can't just grab a bunch of skill guys, throw them on a team, and expect to be successful. There are different roles in hockey. Hockey teams have different key components that are required. And it's entirely possible that in this particular draft class, with the talent level pretty much falling off the cliff once you got into the 20s and into that second round, it's entirely possible that the Pascal LeBurges of the world, that the Alex DeBrinkets of the world, and insert anyone else, the Giovanni Smiths, it's entirely possible that those players were just not seen by the Boston Bruins as being the kind of players that were going to be able to win spots away from the guys that are there or establish themselves as NHL players here in a couple of years. Right, wrong, and different, that's a fact, Jack. And if you're sitting at home saying, well, the Boston Bruins' philosophy should be to just get the most talented player in any situation and go for that upside pick, I would just again remind you that in the Boston Bruins' mind, Trent Frederick might make absolute sense to them at that position. We don't have to like it, and it's an unpopular view, but if past history is any indication, there are lots of players over the years that were taken later on in the draft and didn't look like they were going to be fine players, and teams were even criticized for taking them where they did, and they've gone on to be very successful. Now, will Trent Frederick be that kind of guy? I'm not sure he will be, but again, I go back to that high floor, and if you're that concerned about management being incompetent, inefficient, all that because they took a Trent Frederick there, then I'm not sure what's going to change your mind or if anything's going to change your mind. But again, I would just offer to you that just trying to get the most talented player without taking into account their intelligence, their character, how good a fit they are, what kind of interview they had, and realizing, right, wrong, the Boston Bruins staff, they meet with kids and they have to decide, is this someone we want to invest our money in for years? Is this someone that we want to have representing our team? And there's a lot of things behind the scenes that fans simply do not see. And there are certainly some things that could have happened to turn them off on other names that might have been more popular selections. So in a vacuum, simply saying that picking a bottom six projected forward is a bad thing and a sign of managerial incompetence, I don't see how that is a given fact. You can certainly have that opinion and you're entitled to it, but it's not a fact. You can't simply just declare that because you feel that way, that is so. And I would submit to you that if you went around and talked to different NHL teams, they feel the same way. It's not just about getting the most talented players, and there are a lot of factors that go into it. The fourth point. Okay, the Bruins were sitting at 29. They want a Trent Frederick. You could have gotten him later on in the second round. Why not trade back? This makes perfect sense. How could the Bruins be sitting there after all that time and watching players come off the board? They watch Max Jones go off to Ottawa or to Anaheim at 24. They watch Riley Tufte go off the board to Dallas at 25. They watched Tage Thompson jump up by St. Louis to grab him at 26. They had time to say, hey, you know what? We're sitting here at 29. Certainly St. Louis traded a third round, traded their 28th selection and a third round pick to move up just two spots. Why don't we do the same? Why don't we drop back into the early 30s and pick up a couple extra picks and do ourselves a favor. And so for them to sit there and hold that pick and then get a guy that could have been had in the 30s or the 40s, maybe even the 50s, just makes no sense. Why would the Boston Bruins do that? And there's just no defending it. It's something they should have done. And shame on Don Sweeney for not doing so. He gets paid as the general manager to go out there and aggressively work the phones and make things happen. And for the Bruins to stand pat at 29 and to not figure out a way to turn that 29th selection into more assets that would potentially bring more players into the system, more, you know, give them more kicks at the can to identify some higher end talent or some players with boom potential that can help get this team back on the winning track is inexcusable. The Bruins had an asset in Martin Jones. He was a high-level goaltender. We saw it in the playoffs. He nearly willed the San Jose Sharks to the Stanley Cup final. The Bruins flipped him, traded him. They got a first-round pick. They got Sean Corrali. And now we've got basically Trent Frederick and Sean Corrali, two bottom six line forward, projected guys who are just eh. And meanwhile, the San Jose Sharks have an all-star caliber goalie who's not only young, but signed at a reasonable cap hit and could potentially be leading them back to the promised land and maybe even a Stanley Cup championship next year after they missed the playoffs the previous season with their slipshod goaltending. Is that about right, guys? Okay, here's the counterpoint. When it comes to trades, it takes two to tango. And as simplistic as it might be for us to be sitting there at home or sitting in the stands of the First Niagara Center saying, hey, make that pick or take that pick and trade it, get rid of it. Someone's got to be calling. Someone's got to be offering. It's not always that simple. Who is to say that any team was offering anything of substance to the Bruins for pick 29? Again, if you believe that the Bruins could have gotten Trent Frederick in the 30s and 40s, then you also have to believe that other teams that were picking in the early 30s saw that they could probably get the player they wanted and there was no need for them to have to trade up with Boston to 29 and surrender a third or a fourth round pick in the process just for the privilege of doing so. Again, it's hard to say, but we don't know. We don't know what Don Sweeney went through. Here's what I do know. There were rumors of Kevin Shattenkirk and Cam Fowler being on the trading block and the Bruins trying to work trades. And according to both Don Sweeney and Scott Bradley, the asking prices were much too high. I've talked to a couple sources and that seemed to bear this out. It probably would have cost the Bruins their 14 and their 29 to get an established NHL defenseman. And even if you do that, you have no guarantee that you can sign him and keep him in the fold, or that you would even want to invest that high amount of money. No, I think Boston's best option in this situation is to use the picks they have at 14 and 29 and get the players they think are going to help them win hockey games. And right now, we don't have a crystal ball. We can't predict the future. So Charlie McAvoy looks like a darn good pick at 14. And why not Trent Frederick? If he can stabilize the third line with his big body and play to being a poor man's David Backes, there's a very good chance that that Trent Frederick will be viewed in the future as being a pretty good selection at 29. And if not, we don't know that Don Sweeney ever had the chance to move back from 29. We can call him incompetent. We can call him on the carpet. But again, other GMs, we can't control what they do or don't do. And if they weren't interested in moving, then it didn't make any sense for Boston to take cents on the dollar on that pick and just trade it away. They held the asset, and at the end of the day, they got the player that they insist they wanted. Finally, last point, fifth point. Frederick was ranked lower than so many guys. Ergo, the Bruins have no business picking him. You know, you look at the different projections, you look at the different scouting reports. How is this guy on the Boston Bruins? How is this guy even worth the Boston Bruins spending a first-round pick on? Well, when you look at different lists and different evaluations, they all have something in common. He's just a vanilla, solid, two-way, hardworking center with good size and a good attitude But good size and a good attitude alone shouldn't get you drafted in the first round. Go back to David Steckel. He was a late first round pick in 2001, but that was coming after a point per game season, freshman season at Ohio State University. Steckel put up some pretty good points in college, but that never really translated to the NHL. Now, he was a serviceable fourth line player for many years, and that was good. But ultimately, David Steckel went on to have a pretty mediocre career. And if Trent Frederick is Dave Steckel, well, gee, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. But again, why would the Bruins take him at 29? There were other better options out there. And the bottom line is, if you were going to, you know, take a roll of the dice and make a gamble pick on someone, why not at least try Alex DeBrincat? If he doesn't fail, or if he doesn't manage to make the NHL, his probably not making it is not all that different from Frederick being a marginal bottom line guy who plays in the NHL but doesn't really bring a whole lot to the table in terms of a substance or prolonged success. And now the counterpoint. Who are all of these armchair people who are so certain that Trent Frederick is not going to be a player in the NHL? The fact of the matter is we just don't know. He likens his game to David Backes, he's a Blues fan, and Justin Abdelkader. If he can be anywhere near those guys, he's not a bad player to take at 29. Heck, even David Steckel, sure, he didn't produce much offense, but he played for a lot of different teams. Why? Because he was useful. Now, Frederick doesn't have Steckel's 6'5" size, and that plays a lot into it. But the fact of the matter is, you don't need someone to go out and score 30 goals for you a year and to have, you know, 60, 70 points year after year to get a lot of mileage and production out of that player. Every team needs a very good face-off guy who has size and can shut down using their strength and their defensive savvy and negate other teams' better players and scoring opportunities. Every team needs that. If you have, you know, a line with four highly skilled centers, I would submit to you that you have a lineup that has a serious hole in it and is going to have some issues when the other team starts grinding you down. One of the things that gets brought up most often is that Claude Julien's system demands that the Bruins have these muckers and grinders. No, Claude Julien's system demands that the players in it are responsible and adhere to a couple of basic tenets of hockey, that they play a responsible three-zone game, that they don't allow for other teams to exploit their inattention because they're doing things and taking high-risk, low-percentage plays. It's all about minimizing risk. It's not exciting. And to be frank, the Bruins don't have enough talented players to execute a hair-on-fire, push-the-pace, go-go-go system. Julien's system teaches players discipline and responsibility. It forces some of the higher, more talented players that were never asked to go back in their own end and do some honest work to prevent the other team from scoring, to pay more attention to their surroundings, and to put forth more of a complete effort in all zones. There's nothing wrong with that. So simply saying that, oh, Trent Frederick is the ideal Claude Julien player and that's why they got him, it's not accurate and it's not right. Trent Frederick was drafted because he brings a versatility and a well-rounded style to the table. He's a good teammate. He's a leader. He's an athlete. I'll leave you with this final point. BU coach Dave Quinn told me point blank that he tried like the Dickens to get Trent Frederick to commit to BU, and that he was so disappointed when Frederick opted to go to Wisconsin and play closer to home and play for his former national team coach, Don Granato, Tony's brother. Tony's the head coach. Don was the national team coach that Frederick played for and will be an assistant for the Badgers. Quinn said he's just a terrific kid, a heck of a player, and he could play for his team any day. So if you're a Boston Terriers fan and you hear that, and you're still railing against this pick, what's going on here? I mean, good teams, winning teams, need all kinds of players. It's not just the speedy goal scorers that play with a ton of dangle and finesse. It's also the heavy, smart, responsible players that make you pay for every inch of the real estate or can go out there and win you a draw in the critical final moments of a game. Trent Frederick right now finished the season with 20 goals, so he's no scrub, and he is a pretty responsible guy. Furthermore, the Bruins say he was hampered by a hand injury. Not a fan of excuses, but let's see how he looks at the University of Wisconsin. And who knows, if this guy develops into someone along the lines of a Backes or maybe even a Ryan Kessler, we all might be kind of looking around at each other in a couple of years and saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't have been so quick to judge. Ultimately, Trent Frederick, as of today, on paper, in a vacuum, doesn't look like that great a pick. But there are worse things in the world than getting someone like a Chris Kelly. Yes, getting Chris Kelly in the first round is an overvalued selection. But at least if you're getting a contribution, you're getting something out of that selection versus a high-risk, high-reward player who never skates a single shift for your team and goes down in ignominy. Will people be standing around in 5 years when that high-end, sexy, skill guy who is small or had certain warts, whether it be work ethic or what have you, that kept him from being an NHL player, will people be saying, yeah, we took this guy, and that was a good gamble to take? I would submit to you that only a minuscule percentage of the hardest core draft Knicks will do that. Most everyone else will forget who that player was in the first place. So, on that note, I've taken about 40 minutes to go through and argue for Trent Frederick. It's probably amazing that I could have had a 40-minute podcast dedicated to one player, but there you go. I've given you 5 points to consider, the positive and the negative reaction. The rest is up to you. You'll have to decide for yourselves where you want to go on this. I think that we won't truly know, and the jury will remain out for another 3 to 5 years on this kid. But I think he's going to play. I think he's going to be a Bruin. The question is, how good will he be? How much will he produce? And how much better will be some of those other players around him that the Bruins passed on to take him? I can almost guarantee you some of them will make people regret that the Bruins took Frederick, but others that people were pining for and pounding the table for and raising a calamity about will never be heard from again. They're just not going to make it. So all things being equal, I'm willing to let it play out. Frederick would not have been my pick at 29, but who the heck am I? I'm just some guy who likes to watch hockey games and follow prospects and project players, but I have no more a monopoly on knowledge than anyone else out there. So I welcome your opinion. We can agree to disagree. I just ask that we not be so disagreeable. And sometimes, you know, get people who just really feel like if you don't go along with their opinion or answer their questions the right way, the way they want it, they just get a little bent out of shape and... I guess, can't we all get along? Ultimately, we're not perfect. We're not always going to have the perfect answer, the right answer. But, you know, dropping F-bombs on people, that's not cool. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it. Thank you for joining me for the podcast. Again, I invite you to tune back in on Thursday evening when I will debut the Three Amigos podcast recapping the Bruins draft. And with Dominic Tiano and Reed Duffy. It's been fun. Thanks for listening as always, and keep your powder dry. Have a good summer. Bye now.